I want real solutions, not just campaign promises.
There's so much media bias and misinformation. I can't keep things straight.
I don't know who to trust. What am I supposed to do? Take my neighbor's word for it?
Why is it always the other guy's fault? What about accountability?
I'm split on issues, stuck between parties. What do I do now?
Did you know independent voters are America's largest voting bloc?
Yeah, but they totally feel politically homeless. Like, the two-party system just ignores them.
Independent voters, you're overlooked no more. This is our time to shine and stand together. You're listening to Independent Times.
In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
It's not the best of times, nor the worst, but these are undoubtedly independent times. Welcome to Independent Times, the podcast for politically homeless independent voters navigating our polarized world. I'm your host, Lisa Singer, and I'm so grateful you could join us today. In 1790, members of religious minorities wrote to President George Washington asking, "What kind of country would the new United States be?" Having known only theocracies and monarchies, they were confused and deeply concerned. Washington responded to numerous faith groups, including Roman Catholics, Baptists, and Quakers, personally reassuring them of their protection. In his famous letter to the Thoreau Synagogue of Newport, Rhode Island, he articulated the core covenant. Happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens. America had made a clear bargain. The government promised protection and liberty as long as we acted as good citizens. For generations, this concept was the bedrock of our republic. Yet with trust in our government now at a record low of 22%, we must ask a critical question. What exactly is our civic duty to fix this mess? We're joined today by my co-hosts, award-winning journalist, host, and producer of Fox 24 News Now, Leila Gulen, and Emmy award-winning television news host, Brian Gallo. Welcome.
Thanks, Lisa. You know, I'm glad we're tackling this. The conversation about low trust can be so discouraging, right? It's time to talk about what we, the people, can do about it.
Exactly. You know, apathy is the enemy of a republic. You know, if we want to restore trust, we have to start by restoring our own sense of purpose as citizens.
You're absolutely right. But before we dig into what we can do today, Leila, can you take a moment to put this into historical perspective for us?
Yeah, Lisa, I'd be glad to. You know, and what an extraordinary time it is, Lisa. Just think about it. For 1700 years from the fall of the Roman Republic until our founding, civilization was ruled by kings and queens and emperors. You know, the very idea of self-rule was a historical footnote. Then suddenly, just 249 years ago, our forefathers came together and they said this: "No more kings. We know a better way with self-rule. We're going back to the spirit of Roman Greece, but we will take all of their mistakes and make it better."
It's a miracle, really. A country founded on a dream, the American dream of equality, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But here we are, and we have to ask a difficult question. If this is the design of our country, Why do so many not participate? Why don't all 340 million Americans actively engage in their country's self-rule by voting, petitioning their government, protesting when things get really bad, and speaking up?
I think it's the ultimate paradox. This beautiful, independent car of self-rule was designed for us to drive to make our lives better. But if you just let it sit in the garage, you know, it's not going to get you anywhere. The freedom to make our own choices, the price is civic engagement. It's paying taxes, driving on the right side of the road, and taking responsibility for the country we live in.
And the numbers back you up, Layla. A study from Georgetown University on voter turnout found that many non-voters, particularly those who identify as independent, feel a lack of political efficacy. What that means in plain English is that they believe that their vote won't make a difference because the system is too broken or nothing is ever going to change for them.
Yeah, I'd like to say something here. So the price of our liberty is eternal vigilance and constant engagement. You know, we have to make our best case to show independent voters, now the largest voting bloc, that they have the power to keep this country a democracy of self-rule.
Democracy is hard. Dictatorship is somewhat easier. And that reminds me of a famous Margaret Mead quote. She's a famous anthropologist. And I learned this on the West Wing.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. President.
There's a promise that I ask everyone who works here to make. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful and committed citizens can change the world. Do you know why?
It's the only thing that ever has.
Wow, beautiful. Thank you, Aaron Sorkin, for that. And what can I say? Our founding fathers were the independents of their time, and they literally risked their lives in defiance of the King of England to create this country. They could have been killed. Every single one of them could have been killed for signing the Declaration of Independence. But they did it anyway because they wanted to stand up and say, no more, no more tyranny. And there have been so many in America who have carried that torch. Frederick Douglass is the first that comes to mind. He spoke out constantly, consistently, pleading with President Lincoln to end slavery. The 1969 Stonewall activists, they were independents, and they're the ones who sparked the fight for LGBTQ equality and rights. Rosa Parks, another great example. She was an independent woman, just literally sitting alone on a bus, refusing to get up and demanding an end to segregation. Ida B. Wells, famous journalist, she exposed the lynchings in the South. She could have been killed, and she did it anyway. And she demanded that the government do something about it and step in. And it's kind of crazy to think about this, that you have to remind elected officials, as often as we do, that they are there to serve us and they are accountable to us. But it is the truth. And it's the independents throughout history who have made the progress that we enjoy and experience today. And I would argue that today, more than ever, it's the independent voters who need to carry that torch. They're the ones who are going to be able to demand the much needed reforms and changes that we need in this country. And let's remind the government to keep helping us move forward. And we're not asking for any handouts. We're just asking for a level playing field.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of what Thomas Jefferson once said, the care of human life and happiness and not their destruction is the first and only legitimate object of good government.
That is without a doubt the clearest and simplest definition I've ever heard of what the government's role is. It doesn't get simpler than this. Their job is our well-being and our happiness, period. Mic drop moment for sure. But of course, we're doing this episode today to remind all of our listeners that it's our job to hold the representatives accountable. And the only way to do that is by voting and by using our First Amendment rights to speak up peacefully, to demand that they represent us, or they're going to ignore us. I mean, it's just that simple. Unless we vote and unless we speak up and use our First Amendment rights, we will be ignored. And it reminds me of this incredible story about Frederick Douglass visiting President Lincoln at the White House. Dave Chappelle shared this story when he hosted Saturday Night Live the first Saturday night after Donald Trump won his first term back in 2016. I know we have a lot to get to, but I've got to play that clip. It's incredible.
A few weeks ago, I went to the White House for a party. It was the first time I'd been there in many years, and it was very exciting. And BET had sponsored the party, so everyone there was black. And it was beautiful. I walked through the gates. You know, I'm from Washington, so I saw the bus stop, well, the corner where the bus stop used to be, where I used to catch the bus to school and dream about nights like tonight. It was a really, really beautiful night. And at the end of the night, everyone went into the West Wing of the White House, and it was a huge party. And everybody in there was black except for Bradley Cooper for some reason. And on the walls were pictures of all the presidents of the past. Now, I'm not sure if this is true, but to my knowledge, the first black person that was officially invited to the White House was Frederick Douglass. They stopped him at the gates. Abraham Lincoln had to walk out himself and escort Frederick Douglass into the White House. And it didn't happen again, as far as I know, until Roosevelt was president. When Roosevelt was president, he had a black guy over and got so much flack from the media that he literally said, "I will never have a nigger in this house again." I thought about that, and I looked at that room, and I saw all those black faces in Bradley, and I saw and I saw how happy everybody was. These people who had been historically disenfranchised. And it made me feel hopeful, and it made me feel proud to be an American, and it made me very happy about the prospects of our country. So, in that spirit, I'm wishing Donald Trump luck. And I'm going to give him a chance. And we, the historically disenfranchised, demand that he give us one too. Thank you very much. We've got a great show tonight.
That's it. Douglass showed us how it's done. He showed us how to demand inclusion. He showed up at the White House. He showed up day after day speaking out against slavery. And it made a big difference. And it's always people like Douglass. It's always those independent voices that keep our government true to its purpose.
That is such a powerful idea. And that freedom, that bargain, is laid out beautifully in the First Amendment. You know, the right to vote is central. But the First Amendment is the operating manual for a functioning democracy. You know, it gives us five very powerful tools: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the right to peaceably assemble, and the right to petition the government. So these are the superpowers of the American citizen, whether we realize it or not.
Oh, I love the way you put that. Superpowers of the American citizen. So let's look at how Americans have used these tools to fulfill their civic responsibilities and hold our elected officials accountable and basically demand that the country move forward and it becomes a better country, a more perfect union, as Washington said. So before we dive into some examples, can you both just take a moment and help our listeners clarify the difference between civic duty and civic responsibility?
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick. I think duty feels more formal, right? It's the things we are expected to do as a matter of course for the republic to function. Things like voting, obeying the law, serving on a jury if called, and paying taxes. These are non-negotiable pillars. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and responsibility to me feels more personal and proactive. It's the stuff that goes beyond the bare minimum. It's about staying informed, not just by tuning into the news, but by seeking out different perspectives. It's about engaging with your community, attending town hall meetings, or even volunteering for a cause that you believe in. A responsible citizen understands that the government is not some distant entity. It's a reflection of us. It should be a reflection of us. It's the community of people doing things for the common good.
For the common good. I love that. And that also ties right back into what we were discussing in last week's episode. We talked about how people check out when they feel the government isn't working for them and that the system is rigged somehow and that they don't count. And when you feel unheard and the political parties are more focused on fighting than solving problems, it's easy. I mean, it's just so easy to walk away and check out. But we also have to acknowledge that so many Americans are suffering and hurting and are just trying to survive right now. And the thought of taking the time to follow the news or register to vote or subscribe to a newspaper seems too distant when you're just trying to make it from day to day, paycheck to paycheck. I heard this one young independent voter say it best, that it really didn't matter whether a Republican was in office or a Democrat. He said things in his community were going to be the same. Nothing really changes, no matter who gets elected.
Because I'm demoralized with electoral politics altogether. You know what I'm saying? And
why is that? Tell me more about that.
Well, it's because the neighborhood that I'm from, for example, I'm from Homewood. And whether it's a Democrat or Republican in the White House or in the governor's mansion, or a Democrat, you know, in the mayor or in the mayor's house, you know, our neighborhood never changes.
But history in our country shows engagement does work. When you think things couldn't get worse, they get better when Americans come out and vote and petition and protest and, like, use their voices. It's proven.
Yeah, and we have decades of proof that it works. Let's look at a couple of incredible success stories powered by these rights. Take the right to peaceably assemble, for instance. The civil rights movement in the 1960s was a masterclass in this. From the marches in Selma to the sit-ins at lunch counters, people use their right to protest, to force a nation to confront its conscience. Their assembly wasn't just a gathering, it was a demand for justice that led to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, two incredibly important pillars to our society. It fundamentally changed America.
And on the 5th of December in 1955, a Negro woman was arrested, a Mrs. Rosa Parks, for refusing to give up her seat for a boarding white male passenger. Pretty soon after she was arrested, the word got around the Montgomery community, and there was a spontaneous reaction. I think I could say safely that more than 99% of the Negro people of Montgomery rose up with a bit of indignation, a righteous indignation, I would say. And this led to the bus boycott. The Negro citizens decided not to ride the buses until these conditions were changed. They asked me to serve as a spokesman and the president of the Montgomery Improvement Association. And from this time, I found myself in a leadership position in the civil rights struggle.
And the bus boycott was, of course, a startling success under your leadership.
Yes, we struggled for 381 days, but at the end of that, we returned to thoroughly integrated buses, and they are integrated today in Montgomery.
I understand exactly why you believe in nonviolence, but have you found it easy to persuade your followers that nonviolence is really the best method? I mean, there must be a great temptation to take a poke back at a white man who hits you.
That is true, that it is difficult at times to convince people that this is the best way. And I guess it is difficult for all of us not to retaliate. But on the whole, I have been amazed at the tremendous response that we have gained when we have called for nonviolent action. I look back over Montgomery and think of the fact that for all of these days, 381 days, more than 99 and 9/10% of the Negro Citizens participated in the boycott. They confronted harassing experiences. They confronted physical violence. And never did they retaliate with a single act of physical violence. And the same is true of the student sit-in movement, which included thousands of students. Not a single, retaliated with physical violence. So that even though it is difficult, I think we have been able to get this method over in a most significant way.
And think about the right to a free press. The role of journalists in the Watergate scandal is a perfect example. While the government was covering up crimes and abusing its power, their reporting led to the resignation of a president and reminded everyone that no one is above the law.
Those are incredible foundational moments in our history. Thank you for sharing and reminding us. And what about the right to petition government? Was there a major success story there in our history?
Yeah. I'll jump in here. Absolutely. The campaign for women's suffrage was a decades-long effort that relied heavily on petitioning. You know, for years, women across the country tirelessly collected signatures, and they sent thousands upon thousands of petitions to Congress. They used this right to show lawmakers the widespread public support for their cause, even though they couldn't vote themselves, if you can imagine. Their collective voice, combined with other grassroots efforts, eventually led to the passage of the 19th Amendment, which enfranchised women and doubled the size of the American electorate virtually overnight.
We also have to remember that, in general, progress isn't a given. It's the result of countless people fulfilling their civic duties and responsibilities. And when we lose sight of that, we start to take our freedoms for granted. It's a phenomenon that's so, so uniquely American. We are such a nation of impatient people. We literally hate waiting in line. We hate sitting in traffic more or waiting on the tarmac for our plane to get to the gate. We're a nation that is always wanting to move forward, always striving for more and making incredible progress. And when we don't, or when it feels like we're going backward, it's a painful and difficult to look ahead and feel optimistic during those times.
Yeah, impatient for sure. My goodness. Well, that's where the global context comes in. You know, we're so focused on our imperfections and our backsliding that we forget to look at the rest of the world. This is very important. The majority population does not live in a full democracy where they can speak freely or assemble peacefully or vote for their leaders. You know, they can't demand accountability from their government without risking their lives, for crying out loud. You know, we have to remember how very precious these freedoms are, even with our imperfections.
That's another podcast. All right, let me jump in. Pew Research numbers confirm this. We are an outlier. We have a political system that, despite its many flaws, gives us the power to change it. We have to remember that the price of living with these freedoms is staying informed, engaged, and most importantly, voting. That's our civic duty. That's the bargain.
And that bargain is under constant threat. It's not just a history lesson. It's a living, breathing fight. We've seen a wave of recent legislative efforts to restrict voting in this country. Since the 2020 election, at least 30 states have enacted 79 restrictive voting laws. A vast majority of those states are Republican-controlled state houses and state senates. We've also seen attempts at the federal level to pass legislation that would expand voting rights, but were killed by partisan opposition. For example, the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act were both championed by Democrats, but were both blocked by Republican-led filibusters in the Senate.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court has also weighed in. They've issued rulings that have weakened the protections of the Voting Rights Act. In the landmark 2013 case of Shelby County versus Holder, the court's conservative wing voted to eliminate the requirement that states with a history of discrimination must get federal approval before changing their voting laws.
In 2013, the Supreme Court gutted the 1965 Voting Rights Act in Shelby County versus Holder. The conservative justice's ruling stripped the pre-clearance requirement that states with a history of voter suppression must receive clearance from the federal government before enacting any new voting laws. The court essentially ruled that the racial voter suppression that the Voting Rights Act was intended to guard against no longer existed. In the years since, the very same states that were previously subjected to preclearance have passed a wave of voter suppression laws. Unsurprisingly, these laws disproportionately affect voters of color.
Since the ruling, several states that used to have to get preclearance under the Voting Rights Act have passed laws that have made it more difficult to vote, getting rid of things like early voting and same-day voter registration. 5 years after the ruling, around 1,000 polling places have been closed in the country. Most of these closed polling places were in counties with African-American majority populations. One study also found that jurisdictions that used to have to get preclearance under the Voting Rights Act have dramatically kicked more folks off voter registration lists. And many of those taken off voter registration lists don't even know they've been kicked off.
We saw a flood after the Shelby decision, a flood of laws designed to make it hard just to show up at the polls. And you only get redress after the election is done.
These are laws that on their face may seem benign, but the effect of it is to limit the voting power of minorities.
I just want to quickly add that the 2013 Shelby versus Holder ruling by the Supreme Court most definitely highlights that the fight for equal ballot access is unfinished business, so to speak, in America. But I also think we should be incredibly, incredibly proud that we've made remarkable strides in expanding voting rights for Black Americans, for women, for the youth in America, but we're not naive, and we know the challenges persist. For example, and for our independent listeners, in 22 states, independent voters are barred from primary elections. And I know we talked about this a lot in our first episode, but that is a barrier we need to work to dismantle. And it reminds me of what Dr. Martin Luther King once said. He said that the oppressor will never voluntarily relinquish power. It is up to the oppressed to demand it. And I just want to play a short clip from President Lyndon Johnson's historic 1965 speech that he gave before a joint session in Congress. And he framed voting rights as a universal American responsibility.
There is no constitutional issue here. The command of the Constitution is plain. There is no moral issue. It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country. There is no issue of states' rights or national rights. There is only the struggle for human rights. I recognize that from outside this chamber is the outraged conscience of a nation, the grave concern of many nations, and the harsh judgment of history on our acts. But even if we pass this bill, the battle will not be over. What happened in Selma is part of a far larger movement which reaches into every section and state of America. It is the effort of American Negroes to secure for themselves the full blessings of American life. Their cause must be our cause too, because it's not just Negroes, but really, it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome.
As you just heard, the challenges in voting rights demand constant civic action. And that is the mission of our independent hero this week, the League of Women Voters. This nonpartisan organization was founded by suffragettes in 1920. And today, the League of Women Voters carries on the crucial responsibility of providing unbiased election information through tools like vote411.org. Their enduring grassroots commitment to an informed electorate is the living definition of American civic responsibility.
How amazing that the spirit of the suffrage movement and the shock of the First World War came this great idea that a nonpartisan civic organization could provide the tools that the public needed to advance our democracy.
Wise League leader once said that the success of democracy doesn't depend on a few persons who do great things, but on many persons who do small things faithfully.
In the 1970s, the League started to sponsor televised presidential debates and continued to provide a nonpartisan forum for the public to learn about candidates every 4 years. The League still sponsors local debates to this day.
Welcome, everybody, to our 2019 debates. My name is Alice Pernick. I'm co-president of the League of Women Voters of Larchmont and Mamaroneck. Our mission is to empower voters and defend democracy. The League of Women Voters is nonpartisan and neither supports nor opposes any of the candidates you'll see tonight.
And still continues voter education. This marks the beginning of 100 years of the League of Women Voters and voter education in America.
The League will be known as the place to find information about candidates and issues. I want to continue to work so that League is known as the place to find great information.
We are going to help this country of ours with civil discourse. We are going to educate more than we already do. We are going to be the force that brings people together to talk in a civilized way about issues. That's what we're going to do.
Thank you so much, Brian and Layla. This has been a fantastic conversation. It's so, so important to remember that progress requires a great deal of effort, but it is still possible.
All right. Keep digging for the truth, Lisa. You're so good at it.
Yeah, thanks. And I always say, question everything.
Love that. Thank you. Will do. Thanks again, Brian and Layla. And a big thanks to our listeners for joining our community at Independent Times, where politically homeless voters find clarity in a polarized world. You're not alone in this journey. Until next time, please follow, like, subscribe, share, and keep charting your own path.